extraordinary work. It's a wonderful place. These day labor centers are a new invention of the 20th and the 21st century. They came out of the ravaging of the workers that we're talking about and the disrespect. And this is part of that movement that you're talking about for civil and human rights. One of the most important, I think, civil rights movements of our time, the domestic workers, the day laborers, and this building a community that believes that they need to be represented. So, Renee, thank you. I hope you'll come back and talk with us again.
Absolutely. Thank you, Dennis.
All right, be careful.
That does it for another edition of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Senior producers are Kevin Pina and Miguel Gavilan Molina. Technical director is Mike Biggs. For more information about the show, to listen to or download archived episodes, log on to flashpoints.net. For questions or comments about Flashpoints, you can contact Dennis at dennisjbernstein@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
You know what's great? Supporting your favorite nonprofit community radio station while getting a little something back at the same time. When you donate $10 or more to KBOO tomorrow, November 19th, through GiveGuide, you'll be eligible to win GiveGuide's Columbia River Gorge Getaway Package. The package includes an overnight stay at Skamania Lodge in the Gorge with breakfast for two and a few goodies from the gift shop. This chance to get away is only available tomorrow on GiveGuide, so don't forget to visit kboo.fm/give. That's tomorrow, Thursday, November 19th. Show your support for your volunteer-powered community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Welcome to The Food Show. I'm Emily Becker. Today we'll spend the hour with Grandma's Hands. If that sounds like a cozy, comforting, and uplifting place to be, well, you're right. Grandma's Hands is working to pass on Black cultural food traditions to future generations by transforming isolation and scarcity into connection and abundance. Each month, a group of grandparents get together to cook a massive meal planned by one of the grandmas. Each participating family receives a hot meal featuring produce from local Black farmers, a bag of groceries so they can prepare the featured dish on their own, a stipend, and an evening of learning and connection. I had the privilege of speaking with two grandmas, Marshane Lawson and Vanessa Chambers, one participant, Terry Watley, and the project coordinator, Chuck Smith, on a video call. I hope you enjoy this conversation about the Grandma's Hands program, vegetables we didn't like as kids, the importance of connecting through food during the pandemic, and the mysteries of succotash. Oh, and I also learned about Snoop Dogg's chicken. I started out by asking everyone to introduce themselves.
My name is Chuck Smith, and I'm the project coordinator for Grandma's Hands. I work for both the Black Food Sovereignty Coalition and with the Rockwood CDC.
Hi, I'm Vanessa Chambers, and I actually am one of the I'm actually one of the co-founders of Grandma's Hands, along with Willie Chambers and the Wallace Organization, and I work for Rockwood CDC.
My name is Marshane Lawson, and I'm just so happy to be alive right now to be into this project because it's so amazing. I'm a grandmother of seven, oh, I forgot, I just had one the other day, eight children. I learned so much from these guys. I just want to take them all home with me, and we'll all just grandma and grandparents together and teach each other different things to share with our kids.
Oh, my name is Terry Watley. I'm a volunteer for Black Community of Portland. And yeah, I'm a dad. I'm dad of two. I have a newly 4-month-old and a 4-year-old. So, you know, we're cooking together and doing things at home.
Snoop Dogg chicken.
It is good too.
Okay, I want to know about that. What is Snoop Dogg chicken?
All right, so I have this Snoop Dogg recipe book, and I originally bought it for my father-in-law, but you know, I kind of used it. So you know, I looked through some of the recipes and I found this chicken recipe. And then I go on YouTube and I see how good it is. So I'm like, yeah, I need to try this. And I make it for the first time. And it took me a while, but you know, I made it and it tastes so good. It was so crispy, so crunchy. And the chicken was, you know, I brined it and oh man, it was amazing. So, you know, I just had to tell everybody about it. And you know, it just keeps on coming up during our interviews, our meetings. And you know, so I always get asked about that, and it's just hilarious
and delicious, I bet.
First, I want to hear about how Grandma's Hands started. Maybe Vanessa, can you tell me about where this idea for the program came from?
Well, the idea for the program came from Willie Chambers and Lynn Ketch and the Wallace Organization, Lisa Klein. And they came together to want to, Lisa Klein with Wallace, wanted to do more into the African-American family. And so Willie came up with this idea because I was at the time babysitting for my grandkids. And I have eight of them. And so I would teach the young girls, which was one of my young granddaughters, to have a chop and how to cook. And first we started off with knowing how to crack an egg. So we did that. And then she graduated to knowing how to chop up vegetables and potatoes and stuff. And that's how it got started. Him observing me for the last, 3 years, babysitting.
And then how did you decide to, you know, kind of broaden it out beyond your own family?
That came through Willie and Lisa Klein and Lynn Ketch of Rockwood CDC. They came together. Willie came with an idea, and then I think they just found out how to do a grant, and they got the grant through Department of Agriculture. That's how they got the grant for extending, using specialty crops and allowing grandmothers of African American to introduce that to their little kids. We're supposed to be It really was supposed to be teaching our young kids how to cook traditional stuff, but in a healthy way. We want to make sure it stays healthy. And so that was a part of it. I think Chuck knows the rest. I'm going to leave it up to him to go further.
Right. I'll fill in some of the gaps. So for about a year, Willie had called me in to help work on this. And we spent the next year kind of working up the idea in preparation for the grant. And the grant was approved. So the ODA is interested in specialty crops, and we were interested in passing on food traditions. So it was a nice combination between the two. Last fall, the grant money came through, and we did some planning, contacted people, and got some grandmothers together. And they've been working since January in planning the events, putting together the project, making the adjustments since COVID kicked in. And Grandma's Hands is what it is today because of the grandmothers and a few granddads who joined in early on to kind of flesh out the program, make into itself. So that's how Marche got involved, and that's how Terry got connected after the events were starting. We make a video of grandmothers cooking their featured dish and then provide a full meal created by the grandmothers for community members to participate in. Each month there's a different dish and a different meal, and then family members like Terry's joins in, gets a sample of the meal, and joins us on a 5 o'clock evening conversation where we end up talking about things including Snoop Dogg chicken. So
you mentioned that the grant came from Oregon Department of Agriculture, their specialty crops program. Do you want to tell people what that means? Because it really just means food, right? Food for people.
Yes, it took me a while to understand this too, but specialty crops is basically most of the things that we eat other than wheat, corn, and soybeans for the most part. So anything that's considered a commodity that usually gets sold on the big markets for large shipments, those are considered commodities, and everything else is a specialty crop. So all the vegetables that we eat, all the fruits that we eat, anything else that's grown are considered specialty crops.
I had the, I think, great privilege of getting to watch one of your videos. They're awesome. And it was you, Vanessa, cooking cabbage. How did it feel to be in a big kitchen? I'm sure much, much bigger than your own home kitchen, you know, cooking kind of a big portion size.
At first it was interesting to figure out how to make that much cabbage and how to make the cornbread and how to make the, but no, because I did it the day before, so I had the chance to see how much I should make. I've been in a large kitchen before, so it wasn't really hard. It wasn't hard at all. But I just wanted to make sure that I got the portions right and make sure I had the seasoning right and everything, but it wasn't overwhelming. Let me just say that. It was not overwhelming at all. It was very good, and I had Lori with me. She helped me, and that was really good. That was really good to have another grandmother alongside with me. And that's what we do. We try to get all the other grandmothers involved, even though I am the main person that's cooking. All the other grandmothers come in and help, like the chopping and everything, and sometimes the cooking too.
So when you originally thought up the project and started doing it, did you imagine that you would be, you know, recording a cooking video? And was it conceived in that way, or did you think it would be kind of more of a live event gathering?
No, I think that we wanted it to be recorded because we wanted people to see exactly how to prepare the food. And then they could see how we prepared it, along with when they get ready to do what we gave them, because we give them seasonings, we give them the prepared items that go with the meal that the specialty crop that we provided for them. And no, I'm glad that it turned out a video, but I'm glad that it's also live and communicating with other people at that day when we have the event.
Marshane, how does it feel for you to be in the kitchen?
Well, it's intimidating, and it still is, but having the other grandmas and grandfathers in there helping, it's not as hard. But it just feels like I'm a cafeteria cooker for a whole bunch of kids or something, and just learning different techniques and sharing different ways it's like some of the things that you don't like as a kid, or you don't like when other people cook them, then when you see other people and what they add to their recipe of it, it helps to enhance yours, to where some of the things you don't like to eat, you just have a, or didn't want to eat, you have a different way to make them taste better.
Do you have an example of that? Something you didn't like that you saw somebody else cook? Everybody's shaking their heads, yes.
I never liked Brussels sprouts as a kid, because maybe because when they were cooked in the cafeteria, they didn't have the seasonings and different things that people put on them. Now they were basically just boiled in water. And I can't even remember them using seasoning. And they always just had a bitter taste. And my mom used to say, you need to eat your vegetables. That's cabbage. And I'm like, no, it's not. So I'm like, okay, well, I like cabbage. I like the big cabbages. I don't like those. But Miss Rhonda cooked some with some balsamic vinegar and different stuff going on there. And I slightly liked it better. I didn't want another piece, but I slightly liked it better. So just, you know, different ways of cooking. And, you know, when you think about how you trick your kids that they don't want to eat. Oh, I don't like smooth. I want my smoothie with ice cream. I don't eat yogurt. And then you put the yogurt in there and stuff anyway and give it to them. And they're like, I'm like, that was good, huh? Yeah, as long as you don't make it with yogurt. Well, I did. So I just love it. I appreciate it. I appreciate all of them for including me.
Does anybody else have a example of that? Something you tried through Grandma's Hands that you didn't think you liked before or was made more tolerable?
I'm going to chime in on the Brussels sprouts. I wasn't really a Brussels sprout person. My vegetables growing up were green beans and corn and sometimes mixed vegetables. So this has helped expand my own horizons too.
So Vanessa, how did you learn to cook?
Well, with my mom and my grandmother, but basically my mother. I would always call her every Thanksgiving just to make sure I'm doing the stuffing right. And so, yeah, it's my mother. My mother is a good cook, and my grandmom is too. But mainly it's my mom, because my grandmother passed away.
What kind of stuffing do you make in your house?
Oh, wow, I put bell peppers. I put each different kind of bell pepper. Onions, garlic, two different kind of onions, and except for the purple ones, I like to use the green and the white onion. And I do use good seasoning. I do use good seasoning, and I also use mostly on the healthy side. I try to stay on the healthy side for my stuffing. So not a lot of salt, not a lot of that, but I want it to be good, and it turned out pretty good. So yeah, that's what I basically yep, do use chicken and sometimes smoked turkey.
It sounds delicious.
Yeah. Oh yeah. We have a one coming up this next weekend. Her specialty one is stuffing.
That's great. How about you, Marshane? How did you learn to cook?
I learned to cook from my dad's side of the family. Because my Aunt Jane was the cooker. My mother never cooked. Matter of fact, I still swear she'll burn ice water if you give her a chance. However, I learned how to eat and cook chitlins, pork chops, smothered pork chops, potatoes, with all she swore on the ingredients had to be real butter. She used to put a little bit of mayonnaise in there to make the mashed potatoes creamy. I learned how to put oatmeal in my meatloaf and other things to make it more tender. I learned how to cook. I use a lot of chicken broth. I learned how to cook in a slow cooker. You know, but I really wasn't a baker, and she would have every cake and every pie, and she would basically do it on her own, you know, and have it all presented when we came over. I learned hot water cornbread, just a lot of things that my mother, you know, didn't cook because she was in nursing school and all that stuff. But I'm a firm believer in a crock pot. I figured out how to do the crock pot thing, you know, and I like when you cook things more slow. I still haven't mastered homemade cornbread. I'm still waiting for Miss Vanessa to show me. And watching other people like the grandma's hands, you know, and watching their techniques and what they do. You know, and even though I'm almost 60, I'm still learning things that I never learned growing up.
Have you been teaching your kids? Did you teach your kids and grandkids to cook too before you started with grandma's hands?
No, they showed me how to get to McDonald's and Burger King and whatever else. I could cook a meal. I don't eat that. So I started telling them, feed your kids before they come over here, because I'm not making any. They can get all the snacks they want, like fruits and yogurt and juice and things like that over here. But I'm not going to stop cooking and preparing food because, and then I have to run to a fast food place. Another good thing about grandma's hands is you're introducing your grandkids into how good, you know, that home cooking is. It's not about going to somewhere where the food is fast and you have that taste. It's about tasting the real flavors. And if they see you putting that stuff in there, then it's different from how it's prepared at home. Like, oh, this is good. Oh, I didn't, my mom don't make it like that. And I'd be like, bingo. That's it.
Nice. So Terry, you're a participant in the program. Did you cook very much before you started attending the Grandma's Hands?
I was just recently starting to cook a little bit more because my wife gave birth to my son. And so, you know, I had to take over a lot more of the, you know, kitchen duties. Yeah, I used to, you know, sit and, you know, watch my mom, but not as often. She used to kick me out the kitchen, like, well, you get out that kitchen. So, you know, I would watch, you know, be in the kitchen while my wife cooked and watching some of the dishes that she would make and, you know, my father-in-law would make and, you know, see and look how they're made. And I'm like, yeah, you know, that's pretty easy. And like Marshane said, I'm a firm believer in the crock pot. You know, you throw some stuff in there in the morning, it's done by the evening or midday. So great. I think the first time I got on Grandma's Hands, the meeting, and I was making Mississippi chicken. And I was making it with my 4-year-old son. So, you know, it's just a great process when I'm able to bring him into the kitchen as well and have my son learn from, you know, his father. You know, your mom ain't the only person that, you know, cooks. You know, we're a family. You know, we make this work, you know. And then he sees us both in the kitchen, you know, making a dish, and you know, those are things that he can learn from. I learned through trial and error. Let's just say that I learned through trial and error. So, you know, there was some dishes that came out great, and some dishes that didn't. So, you know, I really believe what Grandma's Hands is doing is really great for, you know, our community. Portland Black community itself. Yeah, it's just a great process.
I love that feeling of experimentation. Like you're a mad scientist in the kitchen. You're like, what if I just try this or this, or if I cook it for 2 hours longer? You know, you're doing all kinds of fun experiments. And I love seeing this kind of intergenerational experimentation happening with Grandma's Hands. And it sounds like beyond the program too. Can you tell me, I don't know who wants to answer this, but who's attending Grandma's Hands? Like who's the typical participant?
I'm usually in Grandma's Hands pretty much every time. So I'm a virtual participant. It definitely brings our family together. We're able to sit at the table, have a dinner together. And then, you know, we get the meal at around 4 o'clock, and our meeting starts by 5. you know, the meal is usually warm by the time we get a hot meal and then a meal for prep. Usually by the time we get the hot meal, we're about to sit down at the table, start eating it right then and there because it's good. So we don't want it to go, we don't want it to get cold. You know, we're good. So, you know, we're having definitely a good amount of family time there. And then we're learning how to make the dish later, you know, so I usually bring my son in there. And it was pretty great because recently it came with a smaller cutting board. And so, you know, I told my son, I was like, Avery, look, you got your own cutting board. And so, you know, he was really excited. I get to chop vegetables. I get to chop food. And so it's just things like that. I'm pretty thankful for. But, you know, we're usually sitting down, you know, asking each other questions about recipes, what we could do different, you know, where you're from, you know, what influenced your, you know, you to cook. And so it's just little things like that. And, you know, conversation starters and, you know, getting to know people in Portland, you know, that's doing the same things and that's really, really interested in the program. And you know, it's great. It's a great opportunity to be a part of.
We have people from all walks of life, all ages and all family sizes. They go from single families with one person to families with 8 or 9 people or 10 sometimes. So some people get a very large meal. We want to make sure we feed everyone when they come to pick up their meal. And some people get a small portion because it's just one person. So it's kind of fun. And people jump on and we put them in random small groups. So you don't know who you're going to be talking to when you get into the small group situation. And oftentimes people are meeting people they hadn't met before. So that's another feature of the program that we really wanted to emphasize. Before COVID, the plan was to have people all come to the Sunrise Center on a Saturday evening, and there'd be hopefully 70 to 80 people, and they would sit around at different tables, work on cooking together, and then also spending time together in community, getting to know one another, sharing ideas and sharing stories. So we just moved it online and let the magic happen there.
So it's an interesting time in our lives right now, and a really interesting time to kind of launch a new program that is, it seems, very focused on building community and sharing skills. And so I'm just curious, you know, what kinds of transitions did you have to make this a safe activity for everyone who's cooking and everyone who's picking up food and participating?
A lot of mask wearing for this month coming up because the safety procedures are a little bit more intense because of the spike. We're even scheduling around when people are there, how many will be available to work in the area. The Sunrise Center is already set up where they've done a lot of work to figure out how many people can be in one space and how to space them out inside the commercial kitchen and the rest of the facility. But on top of that, we had to cut back even further. So coming up next week, Marche lives close by. So when the vegetables show up, she said she's ready to come to the center and start chopping by herself. So she'll be there for a while, and then the meat will be coming by and we'll boil that in a separate location. Maybe a couple hours later, there'll be some more people coming to do more prep. And then that evening, Lori's gonna come by and cook the cornbread, and we'll put all that stuff together. Then Saturday morning, we may have 3 people involved in pulling all of it together and cooking up the dressing, making the gravy. And then around 2 o'clock, our drivers will come by and pick up some of the meals, and then people will come in, drive up, and we'll take food out to them starting around 2 o'clock or 2:30.
That's a big production to do all that work.
We put in about, we thought we were gonna do about 3 or 4 hours on Friday, and it turns into maybe 7 or 8. And then Saturday, Vanessa usually gets there at the crack of dawn. We'd sometimes say officially 9 o'clock, but she shows up around 6 o'clock or 7, and we'll be there until cleanup is done, probably 8:30 in the evening.
So I know you've got limited time, but of the people that are hanging out in the kitchen, I'm assuming you guys are chatting and sharing stories and learning from each other too, because that's what happens in kitchens when you get a bunch of people together to cook. Do you have any favorite stories about preparing meals or things you've learned that you want to share?
I can say that we also, we turn our music on and we talk, but the most important thing I think we share that for me is the coming together and being in the kitchen together, but helping each other out and allowing them to be the featured person, tell us all what to do, you know, because they're really in control and we just want to be there to assist them. So that's the most important thing for me, is to have everybody there and have everybody just know how to work together, because we're different. We're different, and so we're learning how to work together in a very cohesive, enjoyable way. That means a whole lot to me. And I think it means a whole lot to most of the grandmothers too, because we get the opportunity to be around each other and to be together and to say, this is how I did it and I can learn from them. That's the most important thing. That's my favorite time, just being together. Marshane.
Hi. I love the environment. I love the warmth of how everybody is. You guys are just so warm and welcoming, you know. And I like what you said about, okay, you're in charge, we just want to assist you, right? And how everybody just does their part and lets the other person take control. And it's so hard sometimes when you see somebody doing their own recipe. Oh, my grandmother didn't put that in there, or mine, she didn't put that, but you can't say nothing. Well, that ain't your grandma's recipe, is it? Your turn is next. But just a warm feeling, a welcoming feeling in an intimidating atmosphere for me, with the big kitchen and the big pots and stuff, you know, and just learning from the different ways you guys chop things, cook things, the flavors you use. That's amazing. I love it.
One of the big things that I've noticed is how the people help each other out, especially the women, as they get together. We all go through our personal challenges, and it's a safe enough place where we can be ourselves. And sometimes our kids or our grandkids have gotten the best of us, or we got some other family members who are having some difficulties, and it's been some really very touching moments. Even one of the people who have been volunteering in another capacity was going through some really difficult stuff right in the middle of the event, and just seeing everybody rally around that person and support them and be there for them was really amazing. Not amazing from the standpoint of it's not expected, but amazing to see it happening, that people in community, this is what goes on when you are connected to each other, you support each other, help people get through difficult things.
I love it. You all are essentially running, you know, an occasional takeout and delivery restaurant. So you're doing all the things that goes into that. I want to hear a little bit about the behind the scenes. You know, how does the food sourcing work? You know, where are you purchasing or getting all your food from? How are you deciding who gets to be the featured chef, all that stuff?
Well, I'm going to speak on the featured chef part, and I'm going to leave the rest of it to Chuck, because he does that best. We all came together, like he said, in mid, probably March, right? March or April. And we all, the grandmothers, he sent out the flyers, sent out the information, and people came together. And so every one of us decided what month would be feasible for us to pick. So we picked our month, and then we picked also the specialty crop that we were going to present that time. So we all came together and we all collaborated together at first. And then we went forward with the process of preparing the meal for whoever did it the next month. So we all had a part in communicating about what kind of specialty crop we were gonna present and what kind of seasoning we were gonna have. And we came up with the whole list. And so that's what we use, and that's part of the plan that we decided together as a group of grandmothers at the time.
From there, one thing we did all agree upon is that cornbread was a staple item. So every person's menu includes cornbread. So that's one of our inside jokes. That and what is succotash is an ongoing question for both our group and the community. The other part we do is we work with Black farmers and producers to try to get as many crops as we can from them to both source for the meal that we prepare and then also for the ingredients that we send to people to their home. So Mudbone Grown is our main provider of crops. We also get some things from Black Futures Farm and a few other places. Sometimes we go to the organic growers distribution place up in Northeast and just order like restaurants and other places do. There's also a fresh food stand on Gleason and 162nd, I believe. And that's I've been a regular there. So now when I show up there and I'll say, I want 3 boxes of this, and they'll go, all right, go to the back, and the guy will be waiting for me. And he says, so you must be having some big event going. I said, it's Grandma's Hands, and today we're going to feed 150 people, and we need a whole bunch of Brussels sprouts. And here they come. Here comes the Brussels sprouts. So when the events happen, we cook the meals. So there's specialty crops involved in there. And then also our supplier, Mudbone Grown, will give us a CSA share, community supported agricultural share, and that would go to the families also. We try to match that with the things in the menu so that when people come home and they're at home with the stuff, they have the ingredients, they have the spices, they can cook along with the video, or they can save it for later on. They'll see how it's done, and then you cook that dish yourself as well as eat it that night because we've already made it for you too. So
I love that you're collaborating with farms too. Were you able to start that collaboration early enough that they were able to plan crops specifically for Grandma's Hands, or is that a plan for next year?
We'll get more into that next year. We didn't get started up early enough to do that. And of course, we're not farmers, so we don't always know what grows when. So we have these great ideas and we'll turn to the farmer and say, so do you have, some kind of a vegetable? And they'll say, in the fall we would. So sometimes we'll move the menus around, other times we just kind of chuckle and go to the store and find it someplace else. But yeah, that'll be our next level of learning, of knowing what kinds of crops grow when and then how to sort of prepare for them in advance. So as you probably know, it's about a 4 or 5 month process if you're going to plan something and actually grow it and have it ready for that time, and hopefully it's in season. So That's our next level of specialization.
Yeah, learning about seasonality is super important for everyone because it's something that we don't necessarily know. You go to the grocery store and there's tomatoes all year round and grapes and all of these things. So it's great to have that experience too. I think I saw something in your materials about Grandma's Hands also trying to support the local economy, especially the Black local economy of Portland, and kind of having a little bit of like a economic focus too, beyond buying from Black farms, which is amazing. Is there anything else that you're doing?
So I'm gonna put Terry on the spot. I don't know what the answer is gonna be, but we provide a stipend for each of the events. And our original plan was that we were gonna have, imagine now we'll be in this big facility and we'd have 3 or 4 farmers there at the same time. And they would be able to use their stipend money if they wanted to and purchase things from the farmers right there that evening. Of course, that didn't happen quite that way with being online, but we still provide the stipends and we encourage families to go out and go to Black producers and distribution places to make their purchases. And we also provide a list of different farmers and source providers where they can go and do that. So Terry, I'll put you on the spot and you can confess to what you do with your stipend.
All right, so mainly what I do with my stipend, I put it in a piggy bank for my son. So right now it's in a piggy bank, and I'm letting him hold on to it, and then later on, when we go to volunteer or go to a farm, and he can use that money to purchase any type of vegetables or food, or even if we go to the store, spices and that we can cook with, because he loves to cook. He loves to be in the kitchen with his father and his mother, and just giving him that opportunity to choose certain things. I'm a believer in, starting them young. So, that's exactly what I'm going to do. If see how he manages his money pretty much.
I love that. Yeah. Savings is a great way to go. So just to clarify, so those stipends are going to, Are they going to the grandmas and the participants, or just the participants?
They go to the participant families. The grandmas also get a stipend for participating in the meal preparation. So there's a stipend that comes apart being the planning committee, and then you get a stipend for being the featured grandmother, because you're going to put in about 24 hours of time cooking and managing the crew at that point. And then if you're volunteering during that weekend, we also give you another stipend as a token of appreciation. Not be confused with getting paid, because it doesn't match payment.
Way to recognize the importance of things like cooking and planning meals. It's super important work that's not often appreciated with more than like, this is great, mom, can I have more? I think that's a really inspiring part of your program. You said earlier, Chuck, that there is an ongoing unsolved mystery in Grandma's Hands, which is, what is succotash? I want everybody to go around and explain to our audience what they think succotash is. I'm gonna start with Vanessa.
Okay. From how my mother used to make it, it definitely be corn, onions, tomatoes, different kind of bell peppers, and I wouldn't put okra in mine, but I may put some beans in mine. And I think I would, that's for me. That's my succotash right there.
And just that's mine. Quick check. Are you, Vanessa, did you grow up in Portland?
Oh, no. I came from Alabama.
Okay. I'm assuming so it's a regional answer. All right. Terry, what do you think succotash is?
Succotash? I would just confirm it as variety of vegetables. When I seen that there was okra in the succotash, I was kind of surprised, because you know I usually don't see okra in succotash. So I say corn, maybe green beans, onions. What else can you put in there? Tomato. And a lot of the lima beans. So, you know, we got the lima beans in there, and, you know, probably depending on what else you want to put in there, other beans, potatoes, maybe turnips. And the good thing about it is it got to be well. So if we're seasoning it well.
All right, Marshane, what is succotash to you?
Succotash to me is like a melting pot. That the reason it has a lot of vegetables and things that were grown from the ground to the table is because that's all that we could eat a long time ago, right? And so that's where the tomatoes, the okra, the, like they say, lima beans, you always had onions, like him saying, like Terry was saying, putting turnips, which I hadn't heard of, sounds like a good idea. Those are the type of things that were accessible, you know, and it's like a melting pot that anyone could call their own. That's right, there's so different many ingredients that people put into it. It's like a gumbo pot. I mean, it's just a big melting pot of the things that are available. My auntie used to make succotash, but she used okra, tomatoes, corn, but she also would put sausage in it, you know, slice. I don't remember what, and wasn't hot links, but she also used to slice sausages and stuff up in there. And I'm like, this is delicious, you know? And it's also like a soup, like if you don't feel good, and use the chicken broth, but if you don't feel good, you know, it's just a good feeling and a good flavor. And you know how nutritious it is, but you, like some people's favorite things, you know, like some people like lima beans, some people like pinto beans, some people like, you know, navy beans, you know, it just depends on what your family likes, or basically then what was available that you could make for your family that was still healthy and warming and filling.
Marshane, where'd you grow up?
Portland, Oregon.
All right. And your auntie?
I'm still not grown up yet.
Excellent point.
My dad's from Texas and my mom's from, well, she was born in LaGrande, Oregon, but her family's from Tulsa, Oklahoma. So they call me a mutt. I've got different, just all kind of different family members that I never knew. I don't know. I still don't know what part. I think I have some Indian in me and something else, but my parents are older and they didn't keep up with our history that well, you know? So I'm just still learning about myself.
Well, I can attest that one of the great features of Marchena is that she hasn't grown up yet. So it's like a play date when I hang out with her.
Playing in the kitchen.
Exactly. I grew up in West Virginia, and I will confess I did not like succotash growing up. And the only thing that really stands out in my mind about succotash was lima beans, which I didn't like when I was growing up, but now it's a little bit different. But I do remember, because I keep getting asked about this, there were all those other vegetables that people mentioned. There was not okra, thank goodness, because I probably wouldn't have ate it at all. I sort of choked it down as a younger person. But when Miss Mildred made the succotash a couple of months ago, I not only ate a big portion, I took as much of the leftovers back home with me as I could, because it had that good soothing feel that Marche was talking about. So I could heat some up and put together a little bit of toast with it, and buttered toast and succotash heated up became a meal for like 3 or 4 days for me, with the okra too.
It sounds delicious. I didn't like succotash growing up because it had lima beans. I ate like every vegetable, but lima beans were not my favorite. But I love them now. I don't know why kids just can't eat them. So I would love to hear, you know, where Grandma's Hands is going. What are your hopes for what's going to come out of this project and just where it's going in general in the future?
Well, see, I'd like to hear from Terry on this one, like where he'd like to see it going. So, but I'll save my part for a little bit later.
So really where I see Grandma's Hands going is, you know, getting our communities, you know, really in touch with each other and by cooking and by being around each other and just enjoying the meals that, you know, we all can prepare together. And by doing that, you know, as our community grows, you know, we get more people involved, especially the families that we really need to be involved, and just being in touch with each other, getting to know one another. And by doing that, when we see each other later on, you know, we can really sit down and say, oh yeah, we've met before, we've talked about certain things. So, you know, it definitely breaks down barriers, you know, and mm-hmm. especially when, you know, if we were to go volunteer, it's like, hey, I know you from Grandma's Hands, you know, we've already talked, we already know each other's interests. So, you know, it's really great. I see Grandma's Hands really expanding a lot more and reaching out to different communities.
Vanessa, do you have a hope for the future for Grandma's Hands?
Well, wait, I'm gonna let Marchena say her part. I'm gonna hang out with Chuck later and we're gonna send it to the ending.
I just hope, and I see Grandma's Hands as being on billboards and just all over the country. Just the idea of it, this is such a great thing. How could anybody not want to participate once they learn? It's bringing families together. It's bringing grandkids in the kitchen with grandmas. It's bringing, like Terry was saying, cooking around with your kids and stuff. Those are the kind of things that your kids have in your children. It's part of home training is what it is, you know? And if you show your children that this is how, you know, everything, you know, bring, and then you sit down at the meal together and you talk about, you know, whatever's going on about your day, you know? And it's just bringing, it's the unity of it. You know what I'm saying? It's just amazing. You feel good about it. You know, everybody's at the table. Everybody's excited. Well, grandma's cooking, or auntie's cooking, let's go over there instead of going to McDonald's, or, you know what I'm saying? Just getting your kids more involved and your families more involved in the traditional Sunday dinners and stuff that don't really go on in a lot of households anymore. You know, it's just a great thing. You know, I never grew up, but I used to watch on television and stuff where kids would come and wake their parents up with trays of cereal and burnt toast and stuff, with spilling milk all over. It's like, hey, but thank you, with mushy back. But it was an effort, and it was just things like that. Who all over the world would want to see that in their community? It's teaching your kids something else to do besides go out in the street. You know, I just think it's wonderful.
I want to add to that, Marshane, because especially during, you know, COVID hit, doing a lot of these activities with the kids at home, you know, it's scarce. You know, you can only do so many things. I think Grandma Hands has been really helpful on, you know, really getting my son involved in an activity during, you know, during the day.
So I want to give Vanessa the last word. So I'll just say this. Marche usually calls me every couple of weeks, and we'll have a conversation, and I'll have a page worth of ideas of what we could do at Grandma's Hands in the next rendition of this, or where it might turn off to. So the billboard was a new idea. I hadn't heard that one yet. Remember, she just say that for the rest of the world. But this includes everything, and I'm sure Vanessa will talk about this. A video website for grandmas sharing their recipes. It'll be available to people on an ongoing basis. Cookbooks and ways to replicate this in other communities. So the nice thing about this group is that it's a group of grandmothers who have worked together for the last 7 or 8 or 9 months. And what I like to see is in other communities and locations, both within Portland and other places, where you have a group of grandmothers who live in a geographic area, who can come together, maybe find new people they hadn't met before, or maybe build upon relationships they already have, and then do create the same kind of magic. There'll be a whole different set of recipes. There'll be a whole different set of traditions. There'll be a whole different set of histories and stories that people will tell when they get together, either on Zoom or live. And they'll take that with them. And like Terry was showing, they'll share that with their children, and their children will have great experiences and great memories. So when they're on somebody else's radio show 30 years from now, they'll say, I remember when my dad had me go into this program when I was 4 and I got my first cutting board, and now I'm a chef.
Right. Well, I think you said it all, Chuck. That's it. That's very good. Yep. That's what we want to see happen with Grandma's Hands. The most important thing out of this whole thing, even though we were supposed to meet together, I think having the Zoom and then having us break off into different rooms and communicate and then come back, I think that was so personal, so lasting, because we had kids that was like sharing their hearts about, oh, this is the bomb. Oh, this was fabulous. We shifted and it turned out still wonderful.
If people wanted to learn more about Grandma's Hands or support the program, how could they do that?
They could go to the website for the Black Food Sovereignty Coalition, and there is a link or a page for our programs, and that includes Grandma's Hands. It's blackfoodnorthwest.org. I should have that memorized. I think that's the right spot. That's one place you can find it. I think we'll probably put some more up on the Rockwood CDC website, so people can have access to it. We've done a pretty good job. Just to give you a quick story on this. When we had our first event, it took us about 2 weeks to find enough families to participate. And last month and this month also, once the registration opened, it fills up in about 3 days. And
wow.
I did want to add that we had some community partners who helped us with the promotion, and that included Black Community of Portland. Chris did an outstanding job, and he also volunteers each month to drive and deliver food for those who can't come and pick it up. And Beyond Black is our other one of our other partners for getting information out, as well as the African Family Holistic Health Organization, a family that a group that serves primarily immigrant families that speak Swahili. So they've all been a part of sort of making this happen, and we'll hope to continue to work with them. I do get to put a plug in for the Give Guide. So the Black Food Sovereignty Coalition is part of the Give Guide under the food section. You can find them. And I think, is Rockwood also in the Give Guide this year, Vanessa? You know?
I don't know, but I would gather so. And you can't forget Wallace Medical.
Yes, and Wallace Medical.
Yeah.
They've been a good foundation for health services in this area for years and years, and has always been supportive of these kinds of activities.
Yeah, I want to give a shout out to my friend Chris Odom, because he was the main person who introduced me to this through Black Community Portland. We're at a point where, you know, donations is grateful at patreon.com/BCP@PDX. I would have never known about this if it wasn't for, you know, that. And, you know, I'm grateful for all the things coming my way. I'm grateful for Grandma's Hands, and I just want to see this grow, and you know, the future is bright for everybody. So
hallelujah.
Thank you all again. It's so nice to meet you all and hear about this exciting program.
Right.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Like Chuck mentioned, there are lots of great organizations in the Give Guide this year, including KBOO. Head on over to giveguide.org and make a donation. Every donor who contributes to the first $15,000 raised for KBOO will be entered to win a KBOO swag pack, including a hoodie, a t-shirt, beanie, and tote bag. Thanks for considering making a donation, and thanks for listening to The Food Show. Thank you.
To KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Jazz Lives, right after these news headlines.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM.